Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have with me today Toby Geis. She is an individual with quite a story to share with you today. She is a certified integrative NLP practitioner, which stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. She is a master practitioner of hypnotherapy and mental and emotional release. She is a Reiki master. You may have heard of Reiki, which is used on sometimes in patients in healthcare settings, and a breathwork practitioner. Toby, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Toby and I met at a networking event, and she shared with the group that I was in how she tackled the subject of the eating disorder that she had and how that disorder and what she learned about managing that disorder changed the focus of her life. Toby, let's start with how you got involved in coaching people in the varied areas of your expertise and about that eating disorder.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, I spent most of my life from the time I was 9 years old struggling with this issue, with food, with body image. And when I was about 35, I came to a place of healing. And I always had this like deep desire within me that I knew I wanted to help people. I just didn't know how. And when I, you know, it's hard to say I healed my eating disorder, but I did come to a place, very much a place of healing. Although I do believe healing is ongoing throughout our lives, but it is not something I struggle with anymore. I have found an immense amount of freedom. And I realized that if I can do this, then other people can do this. And in my healing journey, I was surrounded with so many people who struggled and struggled and struggled. And, you know, people in their 60s and 70s still struggling with this. And it doesn't have to be that way. So I realized that I have a real gift to share, that my wound is my gift to share with the world. And it's my mission to get the word out to as many people as possible that it is possible to heal from this issue that seems so impossible because we have to eat 2 or 3 times a day or more and stare that tiger in the face, but it is very possible to heal from this and to find freedom. And so that's why I got into becoming what I call a body liberation coach.
Well, what was the tiger that you were looking at in the face?
Good question. Food. Or myself in the mirror, which went hand in hand, in that I used to struggle with, I couldn't stop eating. You know, once I started eating, I wouldn't be able to stop. Like during the day, in the mornings, in the afternoons, I'd have a real control over it. But then when the sun went down, and I think a lot of people can relate to this night eating, I would have dinner and then I would start to put dinner away, but then I'd eat more and more and then I'd go into the dessert. And before I knew it, it would be midnight and I would still be eating. And I had a really hard time stopping. And with the bulimia, I couldn't stand to have the food in my body. So it was a cycle of binge and purge, binge and purge, binge and purge that would last into the late hours in the morning. And then I would go to bed at maybe 3 o'clock and wake up and feel awful and have to go to work and do the whole thing over again. And it was filled with a lot of stress and my body was already inflamed from the stress in my external world. And then I was putting an immense amount of stress internally on my body. So I wasn't losing the weight as I hoped from getting the food out of my body. I was so inflamed. I was puffy and you could see it in my face. I actually can see when people are bulimic in their face. And, you know, I had gray circles under my eyes. Yeah. So It was, food was my friend and it was also my enemy. It was my comfort, but then it was something that overtook me that I didn't know how to handle it. And then every time I looked in the mirror, I hated my body. I was filled with so much self-loathing. And so I exercised a ton. There's a thing actually called exercise bulimia that my therapist told me about. And I had never heard that term before, but it's the same thing. It's, you know, I eat too much and then I have to wake up at 5 a.m. and compulsively exercise. I used to run 8 to 10 miles in the morning before I would go to work because punishing myself for what I had eaten the night before. So this totally ran my life, That's the tiger.
Did you have any symptoms other than the inflammation and the skin changes? Did you have any symptoms? Like I've heard of people who've lost enamel on their teeth from the acid in their stomach, who've had cardiac arrhythmias. Some of our listeners may remember Karen Carpenter, who died from bulimia from, or maybe it was anorexia, I'm not sure. Her cause of her death at was probably the height of her career as a singer was directly related to her eating disorder. Did you have any of those issues as well?
Thankfully, not on my teeth. I feel very lucky about that. But I have still to this day low stomach acid. I have Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune disease and nobody actually knows the real cause of it. But after talking to many doctors, I'm pretty sure that my Hashimoto's came from my bulimia, my years and years and years of binging and purging. And also, I don't know what the muscle is called in the back of your esophagus where that holds down the food. Mine doesn't work. Epiglottis. Yeah. So if I, eat too much and I bend over, food will just come out of my throat.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely have some negative ramifications from all those years of abusing my body.
And then your perspective changed because you've clearly overcome this issue and through that process now are helping other people. What was the turning point for you?
Well, I think to answer that question, I have to go back a little further and lay some of the foundation of my story, which is at 9 years old, I went to the doctor for my regular checkup. And this doctor said I was fat. And I remember this day so clearly because it was really the turning point of my whole life. And this doctor who had quite a big belly himself, and I remember I weighed 70 pounds. And as a 9-year-old, I don't really have a sense of if that's overweight or if that's normal. But at the time he called me fat. And that was the beginning of the end, so to speak. And I was put on diets and I wasn't allowed to have seconds at the dinner table. And it wasn't, I don't think my mom really had a language for how to deal with it and how to teach me about it, but I always thought that I was in trouble. So food really became something that if I ate it or if I ate too much, my mom was always watching me and I would get in trouble. I felt like I would get in trouble. So I started eating and hiding. And by the time I was 12, I discovered bulimia. And I say discovered because at that age, it felt like the Holy Grail that I could eat whatever I wanted and then just get rid of it. So I would not eat in front of my mom because I thought that was the way to gain her love. And then when everybody went to bed, I would pig out. And there were plenty of treats all throughout my house, the second refrigerator in the garage. So that became my cycle. And I also at 12 started working out and going to the gym and aerobics with my mom. And when I was in high school, I would wake up and get on the treadmill every day before school. And this was my life. It was eating and it was eating and hiding. It was starving myself. It was trying so hard to find love externally. And I thought that the only way that I could be loved was to be thin. And nothing that I ever did seemed to work other than starving myself, but that didn't last very long. Even with the bulimia, I didn't really lose weight, but I became a very, very avid exerciser. And I started doing half marathons. I got into triathlons and I did a half Ironman, and you know, if I missed my workout, my whole day was ruined. I built my entire life around my workout and eating. I would plan my meals. I would plan my binges. And I became so well-versed in nutrition that I could have been a nutritionist. And I really, really did my best to try to eat healthy, but then I would have an emotion, something would happen, and I would go immediately to the food because that was my comfort. And I didn't know how to comfort myself any other way. This had just become a habit and a way of life. And I literally did not know that there was any other way until, it was 2013. I was living in Chicago and I had really hit a rock bottom. I had been training for, the LA marathon, in the Chicago winter. I remember running through like knee deep snow.
And I have been in Chicago in January on a number of occasions. That is a bitter, bitter cold.
Yeah. Yes, very much so. But I was so intense that I would be out there riding my bike as long as it was 15 degrees. That was my threshold. 15 degrees. If it was colder than 15 degrees, I would, you know, take a taxi or the bus or the train. But other than that, I would ride my bike because I had to get my workout in, come hell or high water. It was that intense. It was really what fueled me, was the self-hatred. The self-hatred is what was fueling all the workouts. And that I had this in my mind that I had to be a certain weight by the time I crossed the finish line, that I had to lose weight by the time I got to the finish line. And I never got to where I wanted to, or as soon as I crossed the finish line, I would celebrate with treats, with ice cream, with pizza, with beer, with whatever, and then put the weight right back on immediately. So it was a really vicious cycle. So in 2013, I hit a real low. I hit a bottom, and I had been doing personal growth work for about 10 years. And I was in my personal growth group and it was my turn to check in. And it was one of those divine inspiration moments that I had no idea that I was going to say this, but it came out of my mouth and I was actually surprised that I said it. And I said, I'm binging and purging and I don't know how to stop and I need help. And I remember being so shocked that I had just said it. I couldn't, because I hadn't told anybody. Like, I had very few people in my life ever knew that I had this issue. And I'm somebody who's very open and extroverted, but this was a big piece of my life I lived in hiding. You know, so I thought, although other people probably knew because I was so obsessed with, you know, what I ate and dieting and exercise. And so my group leader at the time said, you know, I'd like to refer you to a therapist. And so I started seeing a therapist who was part of Overeaters Anonymous. And it took her a few months to get me there because I had this idea in my head that OA was only for morbidly obese people. I don't know where I got this idea, but I had built this identity of myself that I was an athlete. And I thought that if people could see me as this endurance athlete, that they wouldn't see my fat. I built this persona that I was very committed to, and OA was very against that persona. I was like, I'm an athlete. I'm not obese. But it took her a couple months of breaking me down. I finally went. And the first meeting I went to, I sobbed the entire time because I could identify with everything that people were saying. And I had to admit to myself that, okay, wow, I really do have this problem. So it is something that I can really identify with other people, that it's a very, very sensitive subject. It's very hard to talk about for a lot of people. And there is a lot of hiding and there's so much shame wrapped up in it.
I think I shared with you when we were preparing for this podcast that I had a very good childhood friend who had bulimia, and I had no idea at all that she was involved in this. And I remember going over to her house one day and her mother was angry with me for showing up. And she said the name of my friend. For privacy purposes, I won't share her name. But let's just say her name was Jane. Jane can't come out because Jane is sitting there eating everything in the refrigerator. And I thought, you know, what are you talking about? And I got little bits and pieces then from Joan, who had been hiding the secret from her best friend. We grew up together. She went to Alcoholics Anonymous as a late teenager, early 20s. She was a brilliant musician, and I remember sitting with her. She wanted to apply to Juilliard, and she literally couldn't fill out the application because she didn't have enough confidence in herself. And I remember sitting with her and saying, Joan, just pick up the pen and fill in the first box. And she was paralyzed. She went to Alcoholics Anonymous and got control of her eating by following the program steps that were laid out. Her addiction was not alcohol, it was food. And she was able to conquer it with the support of the group. Mm-hmm. It ruled her life probably for a good 15 years or so, I would guess, because I don't know when it started.
Yeah. 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 I've been to many AA meetings myself. And, you know, thankfully OA began, I think, in the late 60s, early 70s, but it wasn't very well known, but it follows the same protocol as Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a saving grace. It got to a point where it didn't help me anymore. And now I understand why, because after studying NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, I understand the workings of the mind. And one of the things that you do when you go to a 12-step group is you say, hi, my name is Toby and I'm a compulsive overeater, or hi, my name is Toby and I'm an alcoholic. And in OA, it's you say that you're a compulsive overeater, which it was really hard for me to stomach. Cause again, that identity piece of being an overachiever, I didn't want to say that about myself, but I did. And eventually it became a piece of freedom because it was telling the truth about myself, which was so hard to do because I had lived in denial for so long, my entire life. But then that itself became a piece where I couldn't fully change to the level that I needed to, because in OA, I got control over the food where I didn't eat flour or sugar for 5 years. And so that's why it was controlled, because I had removed these substances, but I thought I would never be able to eat pizza or ice cream again for as long as I lived. Because I wouldn't even eat anything that looked like a dessert, even if it was made with monk fruit or, you know, a healthier flour, healthier sugar, I still wouldn't go near it because I was afraid to open Pandora's box, because I was, as my therapist called me, a low bottom addict, where it took me, you know, to get to a really dark place in order to change, because a lot of people have to hit a bottom in order to change. And that's where the true transformation takes place. Doesn't always have to be that way. I've been digging into that one over the years, because I don't want my clients, I don't want people to have to get to such a low place before they change.
Right. Low bottom sounds rather sinister.
Yeah. Yeah. You think of like somebody under a bridge, you know, with a needle in their arm and on their last leg. And that's how she described me, with food. So, I kind of lost track of where I was going next with that.
You were talking about Overeaters Anonymous.
Oh yes. And how, thank you. So when we are repeating something about ourselves, it becomes our identity. Me as a compulsive overeater became my identity. And there's almost like there was a fear for me built in around, like, I cannot take a bite. It's the same thing in AA. Like if you have a drink, if you have a sip of alcohol, you're going to go down this dark spiral, is the thought process. And if I had a bite of sugar, that I would, you know, be in a dark place and want to commit suicide again, which is where I was the last time that I had eaten sugar. It took me to a very dark place. So I was afraid of it, but this is not a way to live, which is part of the reason that I call myself a body liberation coach. It's about liberation. It's about having that freedom in our mind, in our body, in our spirit, and in our emotions. And by saying, hi, I'm Toby, I'm a compulsive overeater, it was my identity. And although I had control over the food, every time I looked in the mirror, I just still hated myself. And the body image piece was really, I would just go down these dark spirals and I didn't know how to heal it. I was doing everything I knew how to do. I was talking to my sponsor every day. I was sponsoring. I was doing the program. I was doing the steps. I was, you know, seeking, you know, podcasts and literature outside of OA, but nothing was helping. And I had a spiritual experience that really opened me up at a deeper level and helped me get on a path of healing. And that's where the real change started. And I got into Reiki energy healing and started working with my own energy. And then I got into NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And I realized like, this is the way. I wish I had found this earlier. By the time I had gotten to NLP, I had had a lot of healing within myself. And it was kind of like the last piece to get me over the hump. And I really started using the NLP and hypnotherapy and the workings of the unconscious mind to help my clients. Because when you understand how the unconscious mind works, it's all the change takes place in the unconscious mind. And we are trying so hard to change our lives with using our conscious mind. And it's like climbing up a mountain when there's a mudslide. You know, it's like you may eventually get there, right, but it's so much harder than it has to be when you understand how the unconscious mind works. And it's a wiring. Our brains are wired. And I know a lot of your listeners are nurses, so you understand this about how our neural pathways work and how the synapses travel and how fast it can be. You know, when I see a brownie, it goes into my mouth, or like I have an emotion, and the next thing I know, you know, I'm eating it, and the chips are gone, and I was unconscious. I didn't even know I had done it. So it's about digging up these neural pathways, slowing down the process, and creating new neural pathways, which sounds like a long process, but it's actually not with the mm-hmm. mental and emotional release process that I utilize. The other piece that I want to share that's really integral to healing is the four bodies. So we're very aware of our physical body, and a lot of times that's the only piece that we're aware of. But true healing happens in all four bodies: spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. And really, we need to work at all of those levels to really come to a place of true healing.
I think that's profound, because we know as healthcare professionals, we can work to heal a patient's body. But if the cause of that disorder isn't tackled, then it's going to perpetuate. And particularly with psychological disorders that are manifested as stress or overweight or people who are anorexic, there's something that's driving that behavior that has to be changed. Part of what it sounds like you focused on is looking at the reasons for eating and perhaps also how that eating makes us feel. Tell me about how that works within your practice. And is there a tip that you can share with us about tuning into how our body is feeling after we eat?
Yeah. Well, actually, interesting that you say that, because the healing begins when you tune into your body before you eat. Mm. But a lot of times it does start after we eat, and it's kind of a working backwards process that we eat. And then we have the awareness of like, oh, this doesn't feel good. And then if you can track back to maybe what you were feeling before you ate, that can bring awareness to it. It's really all about awareness. Awareness is where all healing and change begins. So In my story and how I work with people is getting to the root cause, because as you were just speaking, the anorexia, the bulimia, or maybe it's the drug use, or maybe it's the addiction to porn, whatever our addiction is, it's covering up something deeper. And if you're only focusing on the food and mitigating the food, then you're really just putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. You have to go in and dig out the bullet. You have to get to that deeper root cause. And a lot of times the root cause is trauma from our childhood. It's some way that we were programmed or trained in our family, or maybe it's something that was passed down in our lineage. The getting to the root cause and healing from there is another way that change can really take place. I know I said it was in the four bodies, but that's a piece of it, is healing from the root cause. And I do this process called a breakthrough session, which is a beautiful, long one-on-one coaching session that takes 2 days. And the first day, we dig up all the baggage from the past. I ask a lot of questions. My client will tell me a lot about their history, and we'll start to make connections, and we'll start to see how their brain got wired the way it did, how they got programmed the way that they see the world, or the way that they react to things. And then what we're looking for is the root cause. And there's one underlying root cause beneath all of it. And the root cause could look like, it's like a core wound. It's I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. Some piece of that. And as humans, all of us have something to that effect, or used to. But I do think that something like that is part of the human condition. But for some people, it can be worse based on your life experiences, based on how you were trained to live in the world, to see the world, and or how aware of the problem you are. You know, the more work we do on ourselves, the more we can see, oh, that's that I'm not lovable piece. Well, I know that that's not true, so I can shift. But it takes a lot of work to be able to get to that level of awareness in your day-to-day actions. And so digging up the root cause is what we do on day one. And day two, I use this process called mental and emotional release, which is a spiritual, mental, and emotional process using energy, working on all those levels to go into the brain. It basically rewires the brain. And we look at all the emotions, because our brain categorizes situations by emotions. And so we go through and we release each emotion from the root. And it uses hypnotherapy to do it. So even if the problem was passed down to you in your family line, it can still heal from that place, from that root cause. And people come out of it and they are mind blown. I've had many clients who have had sexual trauma in their history, and eating is one of the symptoms that happens when people have sexual abuse. It can happen because they want to protect themselves. So they eat for the comfort, and then they pack on the pounds for safety. Yeah. And so this process has helped all of my clients who have come in with sexual trauma no longer have an emotional connection to it anymore after we do this process with them, all of my clients. It cuts the cords in the brain. And then we spend, in our one-on-one coaching, we spend 12 weeks rewiring the brain and learning how to live differently. Because once you uproot that old neural pathway, you have to create the new neural pathways with repetition, as I'm sure your audience is very aware. So that's, I know you asked me for a tip on how to do that. And I think at a much simpler level, when you're just working with yourself and you're not working with a practitioner, it's when you have a feeling, can you take a breath? Slow down, maybe put your hand on your heart and sit with the emotion. Because when we're eating, we're running from ourselves. And the healing is about tuning in to ourselves and going and feeling the pain and just being with the pain. And can you feel what it feels like? Can you just sit with it and notice it and acknowledge it? And of course, meditation helps with this practice and a lot of patience. But if you can just wait 20 minutes, you know, like you have an emotion and then you just want to go eat. But if you can just put 20 minutes in between the emotion and putting the food in your mouth, mm-hmm. a lot of times that can help curb it. But for some people, depending on where you are in your journey, that's asking a lot. And it really helps to work with a skilled practitioner if you're far on your journey.
I can think about when you're talking about patterns, about growing up in a household where we had cake, ice cream, or pie for dessert every night. And dessert was an essential part of the meal. fruit was not even in the scheme of what would be considered an acceptable way to end the meal. And when you think about those patterns and how that carries over into adulthood, then you realize, as I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that there's that rewiring process that now we need to end the meal with a light fruit if we need that sweetness, rather than the cake, the pie, the cookies, the ice cream that a generation of us was raised with. I noticed the difference, Toby, when I was in my church a couple of years ago, and there was a woman with a couple of little kids, and they were reaching for the plate that had cookies on them. And she said, "No, you know that cookies are not good. You know, let's have fresh fruit instead." And I thought, she's training them right from the beginning not to believe that that highly processed sugar and fat and butter and a flour and all those wonderful things that in my generation we thought, well, this was Nirvana, the chocolate chip cookie. I know there's some people listening to this who are going to say, "Oh, what I wouldn't give for a nice warm chocolate chip cookie right now, fresh from the oven. I'm making mouths water." When you take a look at the training, and that's just one piece of what I think that you do with people, is uncovering family eating patterns that have dictated what seems normal to people. And yet for other families, they have a whole different concept of what is normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you learned in your family can be part of your identity. So if you're just doing a diet, it's probably not working because it's a much deeper level of wiring, of training, of habit. But habits can be changed. Absolutely. And the other piece I want to say is that body liberation is about, it's not about restricting. It's about being able to eat those things, but eat them more consciously without guilt. You know, it's like, okay, I'm having an emotion, so I'm going to choose not to eat that cookie, or I'm having an emotion, I'm going to acknowledge it and be with it, and then I'm going to still eat the cookie. But when you like have a more conscious decision around it, there's no reason to feel guilt. It's when we do things unconsciously, or we're sitting in front of the TV and oops, we just ate a whole pint of ice cream without even realizing it. And we didn't even taste it. So it wasn't even enjoyable, but it's really about creating consciousness around our food. You can still eat the things that you want, but it's about creating a different relationship with the food, creating a different relationship with your body, your mind, your emotions, with your whole being.
And maybe it's eating one quarter of the pint of ice cream instead of the entire pint, or one cookie instead of three, or one piece of chocolate instead of 10.
Yes.
Or one slice of pizza instead of half of the pizza. All of those things that can set up reactions in our bodies if we eat too much of them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And last night I had a couple bites of coconut ice cream, which was amazing because I didn't used to have that in my house, but now I can have desserts in my house. I can have almond butter and peanut butter in the house. And I didn't even used to bring dates into the house because they were too sweet for me, but I've got a carton of dates that I've actually kind of forgot about until this moment. But I forget that those foods are there, where before it would be like cookies, cookies, cookies. Like it would be hammering in my brain and I wouldn't be able to stay away from them. If they were in the house, they were in my mouth.
Understood. Ice cream sits in the freezer and says, "Pat, I'm here. What about me?"
Yeah.
Well, Toby, how can our listener find out more about you and the services that you offer?
I do want to share about a course that I have going on right now. It's called Eliminate Emotional Eating, a 6-week blueprint to guilt-free eating. And we're in week 2 only, but I will be doing it again starting up in July. And you can find out that information and more on my website, which is www.tghealingworks.com, tghealingworks.com. And you can contact me there, read all about body liberation and breakthrough sessions and energy healing and more.
Well, then be sure to go to Toby's website and get on her mailing list so that you get notified about the next time she's doing this course. If this is something that resonates with you, you may know somebody in your life who is struggling with an eating disorder. And hopefully you've gotten some tips from Toby's program that will help you in gaining some insight as to why this is an issue and the hope that it is something that can be overcome. We don't have to be struggling for years and decades with eating problems. This requires some work, as Toby has shared the work that she's gone through. Toby, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate your presence and your wisdom. And for you who is listening to this program, be sure to go to Apple Podcasts. Give this podcast a rating and a review. That will help other listeners who are debating about whether or not they should pay attention to Legal Nurse Podcast. And we'll see you next week with a new show. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. Janice McIntosh is with me today, who is a home care nursing expert witness. We've just spent a half an hour roaming around the complicated and dangerous halls of a home care case. Janice, what are some of the key topics that we covered in your show?
Hi, Pat. We talked about the different types of categories that home care can fall into. It's not just about coming in and taking care of someone after a hospital discharge. There's so many other areas that we cover in home care. There's also breaches in the standard of care, the types of cases that I've seen. And then the types of documentation that a legal nurse consultant or an attorney would be looking for when they are looking over a home care case.
Wonderful. Well, this has been Pat Iyer and Janice McIntosh for Legal Nurse Podcast, talking about home care cases, some of the traps, some of the liability issues, some of the unique aspects of delivering care in homes behind closed doors. Be sure to get Janice's podcast queued up so that you can learn from an expert in this area.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.